Now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. It is time for Tech Talk. I am Jim Russ, sitting in for Dr. Schertz, who is away on business this week. But we will have all of the things you come to expect from Tech Talk, and we will start, first of all, by answering your letters.
But now, it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox!
Oh, yeah, the mailbag was filled.
He's back rested and refreshed,
by
the way.
He is. That's very good. I'm so glad to hear that.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah. Maybe I'll also talk, I think, about how to use a proxy server and what that is. I mean, since I mentioned it, I'll give the facts behind it so you can all use proxy servers. Many people use them so they can do anonymous surfing of the web.
Ooh.
See, so that's...
Sounds nefarious.
And many people use proxy servers, like how businesses block certain websites.
Yeah.
They can use proxy servers to
get around
those
that.
Blocks.
Yeah.
I don't know why I talk about this stuff. Okay, but now we've got an email from Robert Taylor. Hey, Doc, still enjoying your show in Amarillo, Texas. Robert listens over the. He's from Amarillo. He's been a long time listener.
Is he our listener? That's the policeman.
Yeah, he said I heard David Byrd talking up the iPhone again.
Of course.
He says, "Well, I was actually looking at the battery of my Samsung Omnia 2. I don't need to change it, but it's nice to know that I can take it out when I want to." He's just rubbing it in with David, you know, in the iPhone. Of course, the battery you can't take out. The Omnia 2 is actually a pretty good phone. Runs on Windows Mobile 6.5. It's been stable for 9 months. My son has an iPhone and has had to reload the software on it 4 times. So he's,
ouch.
This is some iPhone haterade.
It really is, as David would say, haterade, yes.
Now, I've got a quick question about Outlook 2007. I started to see an upward swing in junk mail coming into my inbox, so I wanted to use a junk mail filter to filter out the junk mail, and I wanted to use the block senders list, which is available within Outlook 2007. I found that no matter how many addresses I added to the block senders list, they always disappear after shutting down Outlook and then restarting it, leaving only one address. Now, I looked on the web for a solution and only found one that says the key in the registry that controls that file was corrupt, and to delete the key in the registry for the block sender list. This did not work, and now I'm out of ideas. Any suggestions on how to fix this? Thanks for any help that you have. You still have the best tech talk show out there. Well, thank you, Robert.
We're the only one as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. P.S. I visited your area last fall. I purchased a Honda Gold, a motorcycle in Stafford, and drove it back to Amarillo.
Oh, no.
He's a motorcyclist.
Wow.
He said it's beautiful country up there.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well, Robert,
we like it.
I've got a question. I'm going to presume the answer. Did you upgrade to Outlook 2007? Because people that have upgraded from either XP or Outlook 2003 to Outlook 2007. In the upgrade, many of them have a problem. Chances are that some of the old add-ins that were in 2003 or XP Outlook are not compatible with Outlook 2007, and that may cause the software to actually hang up while you're exiting. See, a lot of these files are written to when you exit Outlook. And what's happening is that it hangs up on these add-ons, and it doesn't actually close. And so you actually don't do the file completion. It may be stored in memory, but it's not actually committed to a file. And so that may be your problem. Now, one way to get around this is to open Outlook in the safe mode.
Aha.
And then all these add-ons won't be loaded. And you can do that by running the dialog box. That's called the command file. You can go to search to CMD, in the search box, hit the start button where it says search right CMD. That stands for the command box. It'll bring up a little window, and then that command box, you want to type Outlook/safe, S-A-F-E, which means you want Outlook opened in the safe mode.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll be in the safe mode. All these items won't be loaded, and then try to add the blocks, the items to the block sender list and exit. At this time, your Outlook 2007 should close properly. Now, actually, the best solution is to simply do a fresh install. Now, the reason people upgrade Outlook, though, is that they don't want to lose all their emails.
Right.
So what you want to do is all the emails are saved in a PST file, .PST. So you want to locate the .PST file in your current Outlook and save it.
Mm-hmm.
Make certain you know where it is, and then do a clean install, and then import that .PST file into the new instance of Outlook, and you'll have all your emails back. And you won't have all of that add-on garbage. So most people just say, instead of trying to clean up all of this stuff that they don't quite figure out why it's not working, just do a clean install. And thank you for that email, Robert. I'm glad to know that you're still listening to Tech Talk.
It's good to know that Robert's still out there.
That's right. I got an email from Lauren. Lauren's another long-term listener. Yeah. Dear Tech Talk, I own an HP G85 all-in-one fax, copy, print, scan printer. It's got it all. It's worked great for many years. I have a voice over IP phone service. I used to have Vonage and could send faxes without any problem. I never had to do any adjustments with the fax setting. I just started it, and boom, they just went out. Now I have a new voiceover IP company, NetTalk. When I asked if I could send faxes, they said yes, but they said all I needed to do, I had to reduce the baud rate on my fax machine, reduce it to a slower rate of 9600 baud, and then they told me to turn off the ECM, error correction mode, so turn off ECM, and then now, after that, my fax display is off hook, and I can't even get it to dial. I plugged it into the phone device, and still it's not working. Please help. The tech support at NetTalk is very limited.
Let's read her. That's NetTalk, not the tech support at Tech Talk.
Yeah, NetTalk.
Right.
That's right. So instead of NetTalk, she's going to Tech Talk.
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you, voice over IP has compression algorithms that interfere with faxing. You see, faxing was a technology developed long before packet switch networks, and it assumes that you never have lost data. It assumes that everything goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that packet switching networks work is that it breaks the signal up into packets, and if a packet is lost, the protocol simply asks for retransmission of the packet, and it reassembles it. So a packet switch network can handle noise and data loss quite well because it can reconstruct the lost portion of the signal very easily.
Okay.
In the case of a fax, it cannot do that. So if you have a dropped packet, in the case of a fax, you're just dead. It's not going to go through.
Gotcha.
Now, the voice over IP compression is particularly hard on fax machines. Now, I have UMA. I have voice over IP. I'm using UMA. And what UMA recommends, I cannot fax through UMA unless I turn off the voice over IP compression. So UMA has a way to turn it off. I put in *99 before I put in the number, and *99 turns off the voice over IP compression, and then the fax passes right through. And I have no problem with UMA. I don't have to go to a reduced baud rate. Now, the UMA did say if that doesn't work, reduce your baud rate. But I was able to get right through without any problem because I have enough bandwidth. See, that's the other thing. You didn't really tell me how much bandwidth you have.
Mm-hmm.
If you're faxing and you don't have much bandwidth, if your broadband's carriers that you don't have much bandwidth on your broadband, you may have a problem faxing because the fax is going to want a lot of bandwidth. Now, that's why they recommended you go to a lower baud rate. And they want you to turn off the error correction mode because that's going to interfere with the normal kind of packet switching reconstruction. It's not going to work very well for you. Now, I did go to the NetTalk support page. And this is what they say. They say you can use a fax machine If you're keeping a landline just for your fax, get rid of it. But they say, however, keep in mind that you must have a fax machine that supports voice over IP. In other words, you have to have a fax machine that can recognize the fact that it's running over voice over IP compression, and it has adjusted its error correction code to accommodate that.
Sounds way too complicated.
Well, chances are your fax machine does not support voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a footnote at the bottom of their main page that says, faxing is on a best effort basis only due to the voice over IP technology. So I would recommend two things. First of all, I went to the website. I could find no way to turn off the voice over IP compression with NetTalk.
Okay.
And I went to the support page. I didn't actually call them up. Probably I couldn't have gotten through either. I couldn't find any way to turn off the voice over IP compression. And so probably their recommendation to reduce the baud rate and to turn off ECM, electronic error correction, makes a lot of sense. Now, what you said, though, is when you turn off the error correction and you reduce the baud rate, that you get a signal that says that the that there's another phone line on that is off hook. You get the off hook indicator that shows that somebody's on another phone is on the phone line. Actually, that off hook signal has nothing to do with UMA or with the baud rate or with the ECM. I mean, because it's actually detecting the impedance of the line. So what I would do, I'd make certain that you're not getting the I'd reset your fax machine back to the full baud rate, turn on ECM, connect it to the phone, make certain that you don't have an off-hook signal before you make any changes to the fax machine. Play around with it. Maybe you're going into the wrong port on the phone. You should not get that off-hook signal. If you have an off-hook signal, you're not going to get a dial tone. You're never going to be able to dial out. It's just not going to work. Because it's not going to detect a dial tone because it thinks another phone's off the hook. And so you've got to look at the wiring connections here to get rid of that off-hook signal. Once you get rid of the off-hook signal, then you can reduce the baud rate. Then you can turn off ECM. I just want to be certain that the changes you made to your fax machine weren't triggering the off-hook signal. Because that it shouldn't if your fax machine is working properly.
Mm-hmm.
It should have no effect on that. So you may, in fact, still be able to get a fax going through at the reduced baud rate. I would also try to email the people at NetTalk to find out if there's a way that you can turn off the voice over IP compression. That'll allow you to boost up your baud rate, assuming that you've got enough bandwidth over your broadband. But Lauren didn't tell me how much bandwidth she had, so I can't answer that question. So thank you for that question. It was very good. That is a problem with all the voice over IP systems getting a fax to work. Mm. Everybody has that same problem.
Yeah.
And it took me about an hour to get my fax working on the UMA. So
were you stumped at first that it wasn't working, or did you know you had to go through a lot of steps to make it happen?
Well, no, I knew that I actually didn't realize that would have a problem until it didn't work. And then I went to, as I always do, to the support page.
Aha.
And I simply read the support page, and I read all the support data on NetTalk. It's pretty sparse. It's not a very well put together website, so I don't know how good NetTalk's really going to be.
Gotcha. We got another email, don't we?
Yeah, we did. We got one more email. We got an email from Angelica.
Aha.
Dear Tech Talk, what happens when my anti-malware tool quarantines something? How does that quarantine function work? And when the malware, when something is placed in quarantine, how am I sure that it's rendered impotent so it won't come back? How do I know that it can't escape and get back into my machine and cause a problem? Should I just delete it to be certain that nothing's going to happen?
Right.
Well, let's talk about what quarantine means, Angelica. It actually is used in a number of ways by many of the anti-malware tools. There's not a consistent definition, but I'll tell you what usually it means. It means that the file that has been identified as infected is moved to a folder in Windows that you'd normally not look at.
Uh-huh.
The file is renamed, so it can't be executed. Like if it's like a .exe, it might be renamed with an extension of .qu for quarantine, mm-hmm. so that it actually won't execute. Even if Windows would try to run it, it wouldn't run because it'd have the wrong extension. And then many times the file is hidden. Now, the only way that that malware file could be executed and could be brought back to life would be if you would explicitly go to that subdirectory, rename the file, and then click on it, and then run it.
Uh-huh.
So it's not going to happen by accident. So I don't really see, there's no pressing need for you to delete the any file which is malware. But on the other hand, the only reason they quarantine it rather than deleting it completely is that what it wants to do, there is a way where they report back to the main antivirus or malware company, and they say, have you seen this before? And if the company's already hasn't seen it before, they'll want you to upload a copy of it so they can protect against it.
Gotcha.
And so they're trying to get feedback from you. So actually, once you know that it's not going to be uploaded and they've already seen it, and they'll give you a report on that there's no reason to upload it, you just go ahead and delete it, because there's no reason to keep it around, really. And if it's bothering you,
make it go away.
Just you can go into your antivirus, anti-malware software, and you can just say remove all the files from quarantine. If it makes you feel better, go ahead and do it. But there's no pressing need to do that.
That's good.
You are listening to the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, heard on many of these fine radio stations, 1500 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2, and 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. We've got more stuff for you coming up. You can learn more about this show by going to techtalkonline.com, and you can learn more about Stratford University by visiting their website, stratford.edu. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Dr. Schertz is away today on business. I'm Jim Russ, his trusty sidekick, sitting in for him, and you're listening to the best of Tech Talk.
And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
So today we're talking about Dr. Werner Vogels. Now, Dr. Werner Vogels is probably a man that you haven't heard too much about.
No.
Unless you're in distributed computing.
And
but
I'm not.
He is the Chief Technology Officer and Vice President of Amazon.com. You all heard Jeff Bezos started it.
Right.
Jeff Bezos is in the news all the time. Well, Dr. Werner Vogels is sort of a major technology force behind what's going on at Amazon. Werner Vogels was born October 3, 1958, in Amsterdam. He received a Ph.D. in computer science from Vrije University in Amsterdam. Now, he's author of many conference and journal articles, mainly on distributed systems technologies for enterprise computing systems. From 91 to 94, he was senior researcher at INESC in Lisbon, Portugal. That acronym is actually a Spanish name. It's actually a research organization that does research on distributed systems. Mm-hmm. From 94 to 2004, he was a scientist at the computer science department of Cornell University. He conducted research on scalable, reliable enterprise systems. So he was doing research in academia on distributed systems. He joined Amazon in 2004 as director of systems research. He was named chief technology officer in January 2005 and vice president of the worldwide architecture in March of that year. He's in charge of driving technology innovation within the company. Vogels, in that role, has a very broad internal and external responsibility. He's the only executive apart from Bezos that will speak publicly on behalf of Amazon. So the guy's really moved quite away from the academia world mm-hmm. and the research world of distributed computing. He maintains a weblog, which is quite interesting, called All Things Distributed, which he started in 2001 while he was still at Cornell. You can check that out. It's interesting reading. If you go back to the early days, he talks about his research at Cornell. In more recent times, he's talking about the development of the Amazon platform and mm-hmm. the strategy behind it. That would be allthingsdistributed.com, www.allthingsdistributed.com. It's an interesting read from a guy that knows a lot about distributed computing. After he joined Amazon, The weblog changed to become more product-oriented instead of research-oriented since he was actually at Amazon delivering a product. He also Twitters.
Interesting.
He's on twitter.com/Werner/WERNER. Now, Vogel has described the deep technical nature of Amazon's infrastructure work in a paper about Amazon's Dynamo, the storage engine for the Amazon shopping cart. He's regarded as one of the world's top experts in ultra-scalable systems and uses his weblog to discuss issues such as, if you're in distributed computing, eventual consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, eventual consistency, what that means is if you have a parallel process, you've got all these different channels doing calculations, and you have to keep these coordinated. What it says that if you stop updating the system and just allow it to equilibrate, eventually you will have ultimate consistency among all the different areas of the distributed computing process if you just wait long enough. And so he talks about things like that. When he was hired by Amazon, he characterized his job as that of a big thinker. So his job's evolved. When he went to Amazon, Jeff Bezos said, look, he said, I want to develop a platform that's not only for sales, but I want to develop a distributed computing platform where I can sell services to other people. I can sell high-performance computing services to companies.
Mm-hmm.
I want to develop a platform that's scalable way beyond where Amazon currently is. And so he had to think big how he could put together an architecture that would embed the best principles in distributed computing systems that he had been developing as a researcher at Cornell and embed those in Amazon's infrastructure. So he started working on conceptualizing a framework for Amazon's web services. Now, eventually they came up with a huge scalable system based on his architecture. Now that the system's been created and has evolved into a cloud computing or a high-performance computing platform on demand, he's turned into an evangelist, where he's selling the platform to companies. So now he's more like a teacher. See, this is like the perfect job for somebody coming out of academia. He did his research, he deployed it, and now he's teaching what it could do as an evangelist.
Interesting.
So as chief technology officer, he spends as much time explaining what he's doing outside the system as inside the system. For instance, one of the advantages of they have this distributed processing cloud. Companies that can't afford a supercomputer can actually buy services on the Amazon High Performance Computing Cloud, and they can do these calculations pay as you go. So, for instance, one of the customers are Wall Street companies that use Monte Carlo calculations based on the previous day's trading to predict how they should trade the next morning when the stock market opens.
Interesting.
And they've got to run these calculations quickly. That's a timeline. It takes a supercomputer to do it. So that's one of the applications, for instance. And they've got dozens of companies that are using the high performance platform for this. Now, he set everything up on a web services model, where everything within Amazon is a service. For instance, you know, it keeps track of what you've purchased in the past, what other people have purchased who've gotten similar items. Each of these pieces of data are basically a service. Anytime you go to an Amazon.com page, that page is showing you information from probably 200 or 250 different services which are used to assemble the data for that page. And he's developed the architecture for each of these services. Now, he preaches the 70-30 rule. This is interesting. When I started reading and listening to his philosophy, it was actually pretty interesting. He said when he went to Amazon, he went around to all the different groups, and each group had their own infrastructure. They had their own computer. They would get their own service going. And he said they spent about half their time tinkering around, becoming super server architects, and they would maintain their servers and their storage devices. And they only spent about 30% of their time on what he called differentiated value creation, you know, something that was new or innovative. So what he did within Amazon, he centralized all of the infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
So all the distributed processing, all the storage was in a centralized area. So now the teams that were manning each of these services didn't have to spend the 70% of the time maintaining the infrastructure, which didn't differentiate them at all, and they could devote all their time to the things that provided the differentiated value creation. And that's what he's selling. He said, look, he says, he's trying to tell companies, why are you maintaining all of these servers, this infrastructure, these data centers? Why don't you use the Amazon cloud? We'll handle the 70% that doesn't differentiate you, mm-hmm. and you can spend all your time on that creative process and the things that actually differentiate you as a company. So he's selling the 70-30% rule. During 2008, it became evident that Vogels was one of the chief architects behind Amazon's approach to cloud computing, the Amazon Web Services. During that year, Vogel was on the road promoting cloud computing with the Road Show. It's the evangelist. Information Week recognized Vogel for his educational and promotional work by awarding him the 2008 CIO, CTO, Chief Information Officer / Chief Technology Officer of the Year Award. He's married to Annette Vogel, and they have two daughters. So this is an interesting case of somebody who went from academia into business and distributed computing. It also, it's kind of a hint for those of you in technology where you want to go. And so if you look at the Amazon.com architecture, there's a lot of information out there on how they're – and he's basically supporting all the distributed – he's got in it. He's got Linux. He's got Microsoft. He's got all the technologies. He really doesn't care which technology is underneath it. He's running, though, everything as a service. Everything is what they call an application programming interface where each service can operate independently, and if you have a web page and you want to draw from the databases, you actually can't talk directly to any one database. You have to go through a service interface, through an API. The service talks to the database, so the database is protected and in the background. It's a very, very good architecture, and there's a lot to learn from it. And this is, I think they're getting into a new business other than store business, mm-hmm. Other than selling things with the platform. And this was really Jeff Bezos' vision, and it's now coming to fruition under Dr. Werner Vogels.
And this is the Best of Tech Talk, heard every week here on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by, the pop quiz is up next here on the Best of Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. And I would be the aforementioned this guy right here. Hi, this is Jim Russ sitting in for Dr. Richard Church, who is away on business this weekend. So I have the honors of doing the Pop Quiz. We just got finished talking about Dr. Werner Vogels, who is involved in Amazon. Now, at the early onset of his tech career, he had a technology-oriented weblog, and I need to know what the name of that blog was. If you know the answer to that question, call me right now, 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. That number, once again, 877-936-9333. The winner, the person with the right answer, gets lunch for two at the Stratford, at the Escafe at Stratford University, the campus of Falls Church, or at the facility we have in Richmond. This is the best of Tech Talk.
And now we're going to talk about iPhone forensics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could also be forensics applied to BlackBerry, applied to the Android, any of these smartphones.
Right.
Now, law enforcement experts have said that the iPhone technology records a wealth of information that can be tapped more easily than the BlackBerry and the Droid to help police learn where you've been, what you've been doing there, and whether you've got something to hide.
Yikes.
Now, very few people have any idea about how to actually remove data from their iPhone. Sam Brothers said he's a cell phone forensics researcher at U.S. Customs and Border Protection who teaches law enforcement agents on how to retrieve information from iPhones in criminal cases. Now, 2 years ago, when iPhone sales rocketed, a former hacker, Jonathan Ziarski decided that law enforcement agencies might need help retrieving data from iPhone devices. So he wrote a book, 144-page book, called iPhone Forensics, which is published by O'Reilly Media. You can just go down and order this
thing,
iPhone Forensics. Now, for instance, every time an iPhone user closes out a built-in mapping application, the phone snaps a screenshot and stores it. Now, those screen snapshots can contain images of emails, or anytime you close any application, it makes a snapshot. And so you could have an email of where you are on the map. You could have an image of an email or proof of activities that might be incriminating. And there are thousands of such snapshots every time you open and close applications that are there and stored by the iPhone. iPhone photos also are embedded with geographic tags. Geotags that are basically tied to the GPS coordinates. They also have identifying information like when the photo was taken and the serial number of the phone that took it. So you might have a picture with a geotag on it, and the authorities could tell exactly that you were at that location at that time. Even if you upload that picture, say, to Flickr or to or to some photo sharing thing. All that tagging information is contained on the photo itself, including the serial number of the iPhone, the geo information, and everything. It's all right there.
So don't take a picture of the crime scene that you just created, right?
Now, you can actually, now what I did on my BlackBerry, I turned off geotagging.
Mm-hmm.
You can go into options on your you can turn off geotagging, but it's on by default, it's on initially. Now information is also stored in the browser history, and that's very easy to pull that up. In fact, you know, you can see and clearing out the history really isn't enough to clean out the device. Because even if the data is in the deleted bin, they can still retrieve it. And much is contained within the phone itself. See, also many iPhone users agree to let the device locate them so they can fully use the phone's mapping functions using the GPS system. There's a free application called Urban Spoon, which is primarily designed to help users locate nearby restaurants, yet it stores data of where you've been, time, point by point, so it's giving you a complete track of where you've been and, mm-hmm. and what you've done. Now, the other thing, too, the iPhone logs everything that you type in. So even though you might have deleted an email or deleted a text message, stored in cache are actually the sequences of keystrokes that you typed. Mm-hmm. And the police can go in and reconstruct that. They could reconstruct a text message. They could reconstruct an email. All of that is there. Now, the interesting thing is that the courts have viewed that that a phone is much like a reach-in container, like a glove box or cigarette pack, so they can look at it without a search warrant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, recently, the Ohio Supreme Court overruled that, and so now that's being appealed by the U.S. Supreme Court.
You are listening to the best of Tech Talk, and this is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. And you'll also find that you can learn a lot about this show by going to our website, techtalkonline.com. There you can see outlines of all of our previous shows, and you can actually hear those shows. They're stored in MP3 format on the website, techtalkonline.com. Also, learn more about the university, Stratford University, by going to Stratford's website, which is stratford.edu. More of the best of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You're listening to the best of Tech Talk as Dr. Schertz is away on business. I'm Jim Russ, sitting in for him with this segment, which covers phishing, tweeting, and use of phones on vacation.
This big study that was done about phishing sites. This is
a big deal.
P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Right. We're not talking about bass fishing here.
Yeah, this is like fishing for information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during a 3-month study of its global malware database, Panda Security found an average of 57,000 new websites are created each week with the aim of exploiting a brand name in order to steal information that can be used to drain people's bank accounts.
Yeah.
About 80% of those were phishing sites designed to trick people into entering in their login credentials or other information on what they believe to be a legitimate bank or website. The remainder were URLs associated with command and control servers used in a Western Union-related email phishing attack that tricks people into opening an attachment that downloads a window-based data-stealing Trojan. The study found that 375 high-profile names were being used for the fraud. 23% of these were eBay, 21% were Western Union, and 44 and those together comprise 44% of all the malicious website attacks. Now, rounding out the list of the top 10 exploited vendors were Visa, United Servicers, Automobile Association, HSBC, Amazon, Bank of America, PayPal, Internal Revenue Service, and Bendigo Bank in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
For phishers, banks were obviously the most popular choice. At 65% of the total were actually banks. Typically, a phishing attack arrives as an email message that looks like it comes from a bank or an other institution. It looks very official, and it has a link on it that links you to the bank website, allegedly, and it asks you to log in to fix something. And, of course, it's a fake website, and when you log into it with your username and password, they capture it, and then they've got it. Now, it might sound like a lot of work to create a fake website because the fake websites look as good as the real websites.
Uh-huh.
But actually, it's fairly quickly because they just copy the source code of the real website and post it up to another domain. So they can create a fake website that looks real very quickly. Now, there is a phishing attack targeting Bank of America customers that downloads malware on the victim's computer and adds additional fields to a bank login page asking for debit or credit card numbers or other information that they need for identity theft. So most phishing attacks are designed to trick the user to revealing any information. So here is, and these are becoming more and more prevalent, so here is the advice. If you get an email from your bank, do not use any link in the email itself. Because that, if it's a phishing attack, that's going to go to the phishing website. If you want to check something at your bank, you type in the email address of your bank directly, and then you can check on it. But most of these emails basically are phishing, and I never click on any links, no matter how official looking they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about cell phones on vacation.
Yeah.
See, this is how can people unplug when they are gone?
Well, this is an interesting concept because there's some very valid applications for a cell phone when you go on vacation, when you think about it, right?
Yes. There are cell phones, and every place you go on vacation has Wi-Fi, so why not just have your computer hooked up? So you got Wi-Fi, you've got Skype, you've got your cell phone. And with my cell phone, I've got 3 email accounts that come in. I get text messaging, so I'm connected 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was some research that was done, and they found that when workers actually don't disconnect and they continue being connected while they're on vacation, they actually come back from vacation not really feeling rejuvenated.
Yeah.
You see, and so now people are thinking that perhaps they should disconnect. Expedia did a survey, and they found that nearly a third of the workers, this was up from 25% last year, admitted to checking their work email or voicemail while sitting at the pool, hiking in the hills, or otherwise trying to take some time off.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm in that 25%. I'm in that third. I check all the time.
Yeah, me too.
I can't help it.
But there was stuff I went away for a few days. There's things I needed the cell phone for.
I know. But they also said that 55% of the workers who were said they don't really feel rejuvenated when they come back from their vacations. Now of course how about you? Do you check your email when you're on vacation?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I check everything. I don't check my office voicemail. I'm more of an email and a text message.
That's exactly
person.
What I do.
So I don't really stay away. But this is actually, I think, becoming an issue, people being connected too much all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've got to actually consider. This tweet is there's Twitter. Yeah. You can send out tweets. People don't realize how permanent those tweets can become.
Uh-huh.
Because what actually happens when you send out a tweet, you might think it doesn't go very far, but actually it's picked up by the search engines.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could do a tweet, and all of a sudden it would show up on all the search results. It would be all over the Internet. And there are a number of cases where people actually tweeted things that were just fairly benign, and they ended up having to regret what they tweeted. They just tweeted something. It was just too honest.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was out there. And there, I know a few instances where people have tweeted things that they regretted afterwards.
I'm sure.
So the message, according to Bill Thompson, and he says really nothing is private that you say online. And he says online tools and services like Twitter and Facebook create a social space that encourage informality, rapid response, kind of the sort of conversation that typically takes place between friends and like at a bar in a private or a semi-private environment like the street or in a pub or in a cafe. Unfortunately, all of these online interactions have a characteristic that's very different from that. Even though they feel like they're informal, the fact is all of them are picked up by the search engines, and there's a permanent record that is kept of every little inane observation or spiteful aside or potentially libelous comment that somebody makes about a respected public figure. So many times people have put things in these areas in haste, and they regretted it because you really can't delete it. So be careful what you tweet.
Absolutely.
This is the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We love your emails, so please go to techtalkonline.com, and there you can find a way to drop us an email. If there's anything you want to know about technology, you can send us an email, and Dr. Schertz will answer it right here on the radio. You can also listen to previous shows there. Suppose you're interested in something that we've talked about, you can go and look at the outlines and search the website for instance, we talked about the iPhone or the iPad or something like that. And you could see what we've had to say about that over the course of this show's history. You can also download our shows on Apple iTunes, which is a great way to listen to us. You can take us with you that way. And you can learn an awful lot about Stratford University and their courses by going to the website stratford.edu. We'll be back with more tech news here on the Best of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Dr. Schertz is away on business. Jim Ross sitting in for him. If you're like us here on Tech Talk, you use a lot of things that use batteries. Well, here Dr. Schertz talks about a new type of battery on the best of Tech Talk.
Okay, how about these batteries that you can shake up to charge?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've had lithium-ion rechargeable batteries for a long time, but, you know, devices like TV remotes, you typically just use a regular AAA battery or a AA battery.
And then you toss it.
But now they have rechargeable versions of these batteries that fit in the same size package, but they have inside of them a little motion-activated generator. It's called a vibration power generating battery, VPGB. Vibrating power generating battery. Now, that's been created in both the AAA and the AA size. Now, unlike these batteries, though, that contain a fixed amount of energy and then get discharged and then become useless, these batteries, when you shake them, generate power, and they can be used immediately. So suppose you've got your remote and it dies down, you just shake it a little bit, or actually just the normal movement of the remote, and it will charge it up, and then you can use it like always. And really, when you're using the remote, you don't use much power. So if you've got one of these vibrating power generating batteries, you never have to change the battery in the remote. It just always keeps going.
That's pretty amazing.
Actually,
stuff.
It's a pretty good idea. Now, that can't replace standard batteries for any device that needs a lot of power or consumes more than 100 milliwatts. But for the for many applications, they're perfect.
I was going to say, yeah, it's good for some things, but you can't use your radio with that.
No, I don't think you use the radio. It's too much power. Now, the vibrating power generating battery are going to be demonstrated this month, July 21st to 23rd, at the Techno Frontier Conference, Techno 2010 Frontier Conference. So this is like cutting-edge stuff that will probably be hitting the streets within 6 months.
This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We have some more stuff coming up, so stay with us. If you'd like to send us an email, we'd love to get it, and we'd love to answer your questions here on the air. Go to techtalkonline.com. There you can send the doc an email. You can also see all of our last shows, our past shows, I should say. Look at the outlines. Listen to the programs right there on techtalkonline.com. And also, you can go to Stratford.edu to learn more about the university. And, of course, you can hear us here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m., 1500 a.m., 820 a.m., 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804, Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
You are listening to the best of Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Now this from the best of Tech Talk.
The solar-powered plane named Zephyr has achieved a new record. It has stayed up for a full 7 days.
Okay, and now somebody's in this aircraft, right?
Yeah, somebody's in the aircraft.
I have some logistical concerns with this.
Yeah.
If you get my drift.
No, actually, I don't know if any, that's a very good point, Jim. I know when it flew overnight, there was somebody in the aircraft. This may actually be not, I don't think anybody's in it for 7 days.
All right.
Now, the craft took off from U.S. Army's Yuma Proving Ground a week ago last Friday, and it's still in the air. Its nonstop operation day and night means it now has gone five times longer than the official mark recognized by the World Air Sports Federation. Zephyr is basically the first eternal Zephyr. It's been under development for a number of years by Kinetic. That's the name of the company. Solar-powered, high-altitude endurance, HAL, unmanned autonomous vehicles.
There you go, unmanned.
Are expected to have a wide range of applications in the future. The military want to use them as reconnaissance and communication platforms. Civilian and scientific programs will equip them with small payloads for Earth observation duties.
Interesting.
The latest version of Zephyr is now 50% bigger than its predecessors, with a wingspan of 22 meters.
Interesting.
Did you hear about this new HP ePrint technology?
No,
this is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
They have a new line of printers with ePrint. Now, ePrint frees you of the need for having a print driver on every computer where you print. What you do, if you print a document, you simply print to file, and then you email the document to the printer's email address. When the printer receives the email, when it's connected to the network, when it receives the email, it picks up the job, and it can read a variety of formats, including Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, Outlook, Excel, text, PDF, images like JPEG, PNG, GIF, and TIFF. And it basically reads the email and then prints the email for you automatically. Now, that means that you can, and then it automatically upgrades itself as soon as you go to the network to upgrade its firmware whenever it needs that. Now, that means that you can print from any network-connected device.
Mm-hmm.
So suppose you had a document in your iPhone. You could simply send an email, and you could print from your iPhone. You could print from your BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
You could be in another part of the world and print. So the new ePrint technology is pretty good.
And finally this, a trip into the kitchen on the Best of Tech Talk.
Now, what is pickling? Let's go to the food science section.
Absolutely. This is one of my favorite things ever.
Now, pickling is a global culinary art. It's used in almost every country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd go to an international tour, you would find pickled foods just about everywhere. You might find kosher cucumbers in New York City, chutneys in India, kimchi in Korea.
Deep kimchi.
Yeah, kimchi. I don't like the smell of kimchi.
Yeah, it doesn't smell
miso pickles in Japan, salted duck eggs in China, pickled herring in Scandinavia, salsas in Mexico. Now, what makes a pickle a pickle? Now, in general, pickled foods are foods that are soaked in solutions that help prevent spoilage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two basic kinds of pickling. The first type of pickling puts the foods into vinegar. Now, vinegar is a strong acid where few bacteria can survive. Most of the bottled kosher cucumber pickles and available in supermarkets are preserved in vinegar. Now, the second category of pickling is caused by soaking the product in salt brine to encourage fermentation, which would be the growth of good bacteria, and that makes the foods less vulnerable to bad bacteria. Common examples of fermented pickles include kimchi and cucumber dill pickles. Now, for thousands of years, our ancestors explored ways to pickle foods because they would have, they'd have a big harvest, they'd have all this food, but they could only eat so much, and they had to store it over the winter.
And so this is the Best of Tech Talk. Thanks for listening to us this week. We will be back next week here with more on the Best of Tech Talk.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.